And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Now, a conversation about a new documentary that will be released Friday on Netflix that has already engendered intense interest in the cold murder case of a 26-year-old Catholic nun who was killed back in 1969. Sister Catherine Ann Sesnick's body was found at a dump in Lansdowne in Baltimore County in January 1970. Her murderer has not yet been identified. In February, Baltimore County police exhumed the body of a former Catholic priest who died in 2001. 7 years before his death, A. Joseph Maskell had been accused of abusing students at Archbishop Keough High School in southwest Baltimore. Police exhumed his body looking for evidence that may link him to Kathy Sesnick's murder. Kathy Sesnick was a nun on the faculty at Archbishop Keough High School. The documentary director Ryan White joins me in Studio A. He has interviewed several of Sister Kathy's former students, some of whom have been actively trying to help police solve this terrible crime for decades. He is the director of the documentary called The Keepers. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you for having me.
And as we will learn, this story is about much more than a murder of one young woman. It is possible that Sister Kathy's killing is linked to the deaths of at least three other young women who were killed between 1969 and 1971. The film explores the possible links to those murders and to abuse by Maskell and others outside of the church, including allegations that the police and at least one elected official committed abuse as well. Now, there are many components of this story that this documentary tells that are deeply disturbing. You may want to turn off your radio if you are in the company of children, or if you are a survivor of abuse and you don't want to expose yourself to triggers. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can follow us on Twitter at midday. Tom Hall. So, Ryan, this is a movie or a series, a seven-part series, that's really not just about the murder of Sister Kathy. It branches into a whole lot of other things. Did you have any notion of where this was going to lead when you started this project?
We had no idea how deep and dark this story ran when we began the project. I actually began it through a personal connection because my aunt went to Archbishop Keough High School and was Sister Kathy's student when this was all happening. And some of her classmates are the abuse victims of Father Joseph Maskell and were the ones confiding in Sister Kathy. And one of those friends of my aunt's has always been known as Jane Doe in Baltimore. And my aunt found out who Jane Doe was a few years ago.
Jane Doe was because she had filed a lawsuit.
Jane Doe was because she had filed a lawsuit, but the figure of Jane Doe is sort of central in the mystery because she said that she was confiding in Sister Kathy and that Sister Kathy told her she was going to do something about it, was going to end the abuse. And then soon thereafter, Sister Kathy went missing and Jane Doe says that she was taken to see the body of Sister Kathy by Father Joseph Maskell. Turns out my aunt was friends with that woman, so she'd known her whole life but did not know that Jean Wayner was Jane Doe. So 3 years ago, she connected me with her. The series, which was never even supposed to be a series, began as a conversation at Jean's dining room table between some of her family members and a couple people from my team. 5 hours later, we left that condo saying, this woman is unbelievable and credible, and we want to be a part of bringing her truth to light.
And one aspect of her story that is just horrifying and was treated with some skepticism at the time that she first revealed it is that this abusive priest who was in the mid-90s removed from the ministry by the Archdiocese of Baltimore actually, as you mentioned, took her to the body of Sister Kathy, which at that point no one knew where it was. They hadn't discovered it yet. So this is somewhat soon after she was murdered in the beginning of November 1969 and wasn't discovered by police until January of 1970. Right? So sometime in between then, this guy Maskell takes this young girl, she's a high school student, to the body, shows her the body and says, this is what happens when people say bad things about other people. That's an amazing and incredible experience and allegation.
And it's unbelievable in writing. And that's before I'd met Jean. I remember having a conversation with my aunt saying, are you sure this is worth my trip out to Baltimore? Is this woman credible? And then like I said, once I've left that condo, I wanted to be a part of telling this story. And my mind has been blown ever since in the things that we've discovered over the last 3 years making The Keepers, and not in a good way.
And joining us on the line now from Ocean City is Gemma Hoskins. She is one of Sister Kathy's former students. She is featured in this documentary, The Keepers. Ms. Hoskins, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Gemma. Miss you.
So, Gemma.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, we can, and we appreciate your time. Along with Abby Shao, you have started a Facebook page. It now has 1,000-plus members. Tell me what the aspiration of the Facebook page has been.
Well, before we even met Ryan or knew anything about Tripod Media, we had set up a Facebook page for women that had been abused at Keio, and so alumni from Keio could get on that page. It's a private page, and we have almost 500 alumni on that one now. Of course, they're not all victims of abuse, but it's a community where the women can talk about what happened to them, and they're safe, and they get support, and we have a lot of resources posted for them. In addition, because some felt it wasn't appropriate to talk about murder on the abuse page, we started Justice for Catherine Sesnick and Joyce Malecki, and we've grown just in the last couple of weeks since the trailer from about 600 to over 1,000, and we appreciate that because we've already learned new information, and we have some new survivors coming forward that want to talk about what happened to them. Some people that were just reading online are now talking, and that's what it's all about. We have to make changes, and this is the kind of community where we think we can do that. And so when Ryan and Jessica, you know, came along, we probably didn't vet them as much as Jean did, but we felt like they had integrity and were, you know, would believe what was going on. And as Ryan says, they covered the uncovering.
And what sort of stories are you hearing, and have you been able to share any information you've received from the people who've joined your group with Baltimore County
right.
Police, who are now in charge of the investigation, have been in charge of the investigation ever since the
right.
70s?
Yeah, well, I can't share any confidential information about anybody that's come forward about being abused. I know you understand that, but we do put them in touch with other survivors and with resources that can help them. And I know those will be posted at every episode of The Keepers. On the other hand, we share everything now with the police department. It wasn't until the last probably 6 months that we had made overtures for years to try and get the information we had into their hands, and it wasn't happening. So we don't expect them to tell us anything. They can't, because this is an active cold case. But we share with them every piece of information that we get. And if folks have something to share with us, they can do it anonymously. We have an anonymous tip line that they can use. And, yes, we get in touch with the police department as soon as we get new information. And it's been welcomed. I have to give Abby credit. She's the data person. I'm the one that calls people and cries a lot in The Keepers. But it works, and the two of us are very opposite, but we make a good team. And so, yes, we have been sharing everything we have with the Baltimore County Police Department.
And were you, Ms. Hoskins, one of the people abused by Father Maskell?
No, I was not. And I have to say, I can't empathize, but I have compassion for them. I grew up in a fairly functional family in the 50s and 60s, and nobody was being smacked around. There were no issues with alcohol. You know, we would not have had a reason to confide in a priest or someone at school about problems we were having. The other thing is my sister and I were there at the same time, and our parents came to everything. So my dad was very present at school, and even if Maskell looked our way, he probably wouldn't have made an overture, because we were surrounded by family. So, no, I was not abused. I didn't know about it. It horrifies me to think that a one-inch door in the hallway separated us as we walked by from the horror chamber that we've heard about. And these women are credible because they don't know each other and they tell the same stories. So, my experience was not abuse, but Kathy is the reason I became a teacher. She was my icon. I modeled all my teaching after what I saw her do. And I feel like this is something that needs to be done, and we're determined to make changes, and I think it's going to happen.
And Ryan White, Maskell was different than other pedophiles who often found their way to the students through the parents, through the parish. I mean, they were trusted, beloved figures in their communities. They were invited over for dinner, and then they end up, you know, taking the kids on trips and stuff like that. That's a normal way or a common way for pedophiles to, ingratiate themselves with kids. Maskell was a different kettle of fish in that he was actually abusing, as Gemma Hoskins just alluded to, abusing these children in school. I mean, there are these horrifying recountings of, you know, he would get on the loudspeaker and say, so-and-so report to my office. Mm-hmm. And the girls would be horrified and terrified to have to do this because they knew what they were in for. I mean, he really was a very different kind of criminal in this regard.
He was a sociopath, and he had a lot of power. That's a part that our documentary examines very closely, is that Maskell, in a lot of ways, ran Baltimore as well as a powerful priest. He was chaplain for the Baltimore County Police and the Maryland State Police and the Air National Guard, and he was connected to a gynecologist who was involved in this ring and a psychiatrist who was involved in this ring. So Maskell was not only, I mean, I often hear that expression, one bad apple. This is a lot more than one bad apple. This was a sociopath who was leading other people into darkness who were then harming these children as well. And that's the question we really need to be asking ourselves, instead of saying, oh, this was one bad man 50 years ago, why are we talking about this? This was a whole network of people, many of whom are still alive, who've never been held accountable either for the sexual abuse that was happening within Keo or the murder of Sister Kathy, which may be related.
And by network, you're talking about people not just in the Catholic Church. I mean, the people that you interviewed are saying that this network extended well past clergy in the church.
Well past clergy. I mean, other clergy were included, but yeah, people from the community, and often happening within the high school itself.
Even people like the police.
The police, yeah.
Who were they themselves personally involved in the sexual abuse of children.
Yeah, we have many horrific stories in the documentary themselves, which will be hard to listen to, detailing how these police officers raped these girls. So I think that's almost undeniable at this point. When Jane Doe and a woman named Jane Roe came forward in the 90s and were the first person to talk about what went on in their high school, they were not believed, and they were shut down by not only the church but also the state institutions that should have been protecting them and making sure, because Maskell was still alive then. Maskell was in a parish around children, but he died a free man. So, it's undeniable at this point. Nobody tries to – everybody's trying to distance themselves from Maskell at this point. Even the church I saw the other day apologized for his crimes and acknowledged him as an abuser, but it wasn't always the case.
Let's listen to a clip a little bit from the trailer from the movie and talk about this notion of how the church responded, how, the state's attorney's office responded, the Baltimore County Police, etc.
Sister Kathy exemplified this spirit of compassion and kindness.
I have never had a teacher like that before.
She was murdered our senior year, and it's always haunted many people in the community.
Our mission, we were driven to find out who hurt Sister Kathy.
People pop up from 45, 50 years ago who say, I have a story I'd like to tell you.
I believe Kathy Sesnick was killed because she was going to talk about what went on at Keo.
There's an on-the-record public story of what happened to Sister Kathy. And then there's the world beneath.
I can testify that over 100 victims have been abused.
Time is getting short for us to be able to figure out what happened to Kathy.
My father said to my mother, you want to know why I drink? Because we killed a woman and we put her behind the shop.
He said, you see what happens when you say bad things about people?
This goes bigger and deeper than we can imagine. The story is not the nuns killing. the cover-up of the nun story.
Ryan White, by cover-up, what do you mean? Who was covering what up?
Well, as I mentioned, Maskell was definitely powerful in Baltimore and part of this network were people in positions of power. And that's what kept a lot of these people silent about what was happening to them. But then in the 90s, when this bubbled back up again, there was the opportunity for accountability to happen and for justice to happen to all these people who'd been harmed. And as we saw happen in the 1990s, the victims were essentially re-silenced, forced to bury their truth and live with that until the past few years when the media has begun showing some interest in unearthing this story.
And Gemma Hoskins, are you concerned that the church has covered up and has not acted credibly once they found out about the abuse that Father Maskell was committing?
Absolutely. And we have to be careful about where allegations go. But we can't have any more cover-ups. And I feel like there's still some cover-ups now preparing people for this documentary. We know that he was reported well before the 90s, and you will meet people in this series that will look right in the camera and talk about that. And I'm honored to be friends with them now. I don't know that I could do the same thing. They've been through horrible experiences. They're all in their 50s and 60s now, and they are willing to do the right thing for the right reason. And Ryan and his team provided an avenue for them to talk to the world. So I'm really concerned. We keep hearing the same excuses. We keep hearing misinformation about what the church knew. And it's time for that to stop. You know, fixing things afterwards, after someone's been traumatized, they're never going to be the same. But we need to prevent this from happening now. And that means prosecuting priests who are accused, and they need to go to trial and be charged. If that's, you know, if they're found to be guilty, they need to be incarcerated. And they found that of 150-some abuser priests that the archdiocese acknowledges, only two have ever done time.
All right. Well, before we take a break, and Gemma Hoskins, I know you need to leave us now. You got a busy day. A couple of points. First of all, we should remind folks that abuse of children is not relegated and unique to the Catholic Church. There have been any number of other institutions, the Boy Scouts, various teachers, daycare providers, police officers, unconnected with Father Maskell. I mean, abuse itself is horribly widespread. The way the Catholic Church has responded to that abuse, of course, has been a matter of controversy for some time. I did have a long conversation this morning with Sean Kane, who is the public relations spokesperson for the Archdiocese of Baltimore. He was very forthcoming, very open with me. And he does say that the suggestion of a cover-up is patently false. He says Maskell's name, Father Maskell's name, was never associated with the death of Sister Kathy until a victim shared a recovered memory in the 1990s when she recovered, when she stated that memory and accused him of abuse. Police investigated those allegations and the suggestion of his involvement in Sister Kathy's death. They interviewed Maskell and they did not charge him. The Archdiocese, which publicly disclosed the allegations of abuse, permanently removed Maskell from the ministry in 1994. The Archdiocese cooperated fully in the civil investigation into both the abuse and Sister Kathy's death, and they offered a reward for information leading to a conviction of Sister Kathy's killer. Ryan White, you're shaking your head no.
No. Sean Kane's a spokesperson, and I think he's speaking accurately there. I've heard the same language for years from them, and it's very carefully tailored language that mischaracterizes the truth. And I've asked Sean Kane and everybody at the Archdiocese. I can't tell you how many people I've reached out to at the Archdiocese over the last 3 years that play some role in this story to participate in the documentary, go on camera and answer for what happened. Every single one refused. They always refer my emails to Sean Kane, who is the spokesperson, and Sean said that they would not participate. You'll see in episode 7, they agreed to write some written answers to written questions, which I believe also mischaracterized the truth and were obviously very carefully tailored and vetted by lawyers. And I've also many times ask the Archdiocese when they say this is not a cover-up or that I believe they mischaracterize the truth in that type of language. Okay, for the sake of healing and transparency in Baltimore, would you make public your internal files on Father Maskell? Every time they've refused. So if anything comes out of this, I hope the Archdiocese of Baltimore will understand the value in that. And this is coming from someone who was raised Catholic and had a very positive Catholic experience.
Of course, I think Mr. Kane would suggest, number one, he was born in the year 1969. And he is not, he doesn't perhaps full, did not feel fully in command of all of the facts to be on camera, but he said he did willfully answer questions.
But there are plenty of people who were aware of the facts at the time who will not go camera. And I was born in 1981, by the way.
Right. You are a young man, sir. I will come back with this young man, Ryan White. He is the director of the new docuseries that will be available on Netflix on Friday. It's called The Keepers. Gemma Hoskins has joined us on the phone. She is featured in the documentary. Gemma, thank you very much. I appreciate it. When we come back from a break, we will take your calls and comments. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Follow us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the broadcast, a conversation about diversity in newsrooms and media organizations. A new report by NPR assesses the progress that that organization has made in bringing more people of color and different ethnicities into their news operations. We'll talk about what progress has been made, if any, on that score at NPR and at other media outlets. That's midday on the media tomorrow at noon. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about a new 7-part documentary that chronicles the story of the murder of a young Catholic nun nearly 50 years ago. Sister Catherine Ann Sesnick's body was found about 2 months after she went missing in late 1969. The murder is still an open cold case for the Baltimore County Police Department, but interest in the case is sure to increase when The Keepers becomes available for streaming on Netflix on Friday. Sister Kathy's story is about much more than her murder. In 1992, a Catholic priest named A. Joseph Maskell was accused of sexually abusing two former students at Archbishop Keough High School, where Sister Kathy had taught. 2 years later, a former student at the school implicated Maskell in the murder of Kathy Sesnick. Maskell was removed from ministry that year. That was 1992, or 1994, I guess, by the time he was removed. He died in 2001, denying all the allegations against him. If you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we need to warn you that our conversation today could contain triggers that may cause you difficulty. Ryan White is the director of this documentary, The Keepers, and he joins me today in our studio. You are welcome to join us on the phone as well, 410-662-8780. If you want to drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So when you start a documentary, Ryan, you alluded to this when we were talking about this a few minutes ago, you never quite know where it's going to lead, I suppose. But now that you've finished it, what are your aspirations for this movie? What do you hope will happen? Already, I've spoken to people at the Baltimore County Police Department, and they are bracing themselves for a flood of new information and new tips that are related to either the abuse or perhaps even the murder of Sister Kathy.
Yeah. I mean, when we began this, like I said, it began with a 5-hour conversation at a dining room table with a survivor. And I knew that we were looking into a murder that at that point was already 44, 45 years old and seemingly had been deliberately buried. So our mantra at the beginning was always, we're not here to solve a murder. Now, 3 years later, at the finish line, I fully believe, I guess it's the optimist in me that my mom instilled, I fully believe that we can solve this murder still and that there are people still alive who could be held accountable. However, that might not happen. What we've seen throughout the story of The Keepers is that the institutions that normally deliver our traditional form of justice have failed. They have failed people. They have failed to protect the children. So at this point, what
and those institutions are who?
The police department. I mean, and I actually give a lot of credit to the Baltimore County Police Department for participating in the documentary, opening up their cold case files, sharing the story with us. And that's not to wash their hands completely of crimes that may have done over the last 45 years. But nobody's saying that these institutions are all bad, or everybody who inherits the case now, like someone like Sean Kane or Detective Gary Childs, who's heading the case at Baltimore County, are bad people. But we have to clean up the institutions and acknowledge what happened so we make sure this doesn't happen again. So what I would say is, the biggest takeaway that I think can happen is, I think justice can be still delivered. And if that can come out of the documentary, you know, there's many answers throughout The Keepers, because it's a very twisted web of storylines. So there's many answers, but there's also there's a lot of question marks at the end of it. And a lot of those question marks can be answered with what happens after the documentary, if people in positions of authority or people have information are finally willing to speak on the record. And I'm hoping the exposure of the documentary and the bravery of all of those people that Gemma was referencing, these survivors who are bearing their souls on camera of the most horrific parts of their lives that have always been silenced and never been believed, I hope that bravery is not for nothing.
Just this month, a week or so ago, a woman has come forward through her attorney to allege sexual abuse in the early 1970s, right around the time that this was all happening. Again, Sister Kathy was murdered at the end of 1969, and she has alleged abuse by a deceased Baltimore County police officer. This information comes from the Baltimore County Police Department.
Oh, wow, they told you that.
They did tell me that, and they've told the world that. It's on their website, as a matter of fact. This officer was associated with Sister Kathy and with Father Maskell. The woman has declined to be interviewed and wishes to stay anonymous, which is, of course, very much her right. But this, of course, is just a few weeks ago, so this didn't have, you weren't able to put it in your documentary. But have you heard things since the filming ended and the editing ended that leads you to think that this documentary or this investigation could go in even different directions than you originally thought?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, we deliberately kept this documentary pretty quiet while we were making it, and Netflix agreed with that. We thought it would interfere with our process. So it wasn't until the trailer came out 2 weeks ago that there was really any announcement. And we saw in a major way the branches of Baltimore get shaken with that, and information was coming out like crazy. Now, that piece of information that you just said is not in the documentary, but what I will say is that I hope people tune in for it, because you do get to see certain people who still defend Maskell, certain police officers who don't even believe that he was involved in the abuse, who may have been investigating the murder as well in some capacity. So I didn't know the Baltimore County Police was saying that publicly now, and I'm not naming any names because I don't need a lawsuit, but there's a lot of people with question marks around them, and I hope that the Baltimore County Police, even if they are people from their own department from the past, find out enough information about that person that says that they may have been involved in the abuse and or the murder and or the cover-ups of both of those, that they're willing to name that person finally.
Again, my conversation with Sean Kane, he brought up the fact that about $472,000 so far has been paid to victims of Father Maskell. Some $10.6 million has been paid to victims of abuse over the last 35 years. He's quick to point out that this money comes from insurance that the church owns, not from the collection plates. Sean Kane tells me that, you know, the church wants to do the right thing, and that they have offered counseling in perpetuity to anybody who needs it, or cash settlements, which they have given to people. But you're saying that much more should be done?
Yeah, I don't think they should be patting themselves on the back for that. I think part of the problem is the settlements, and our documentary documents the process of mediation that these Maskell survivors eventually went through with the Archdiocese. And I'm sure some includes the 13 or 14 settlements that they paid out to Maskell survivors. But part of the problem here are these settlements, is that our state is not standing up for these victims. And therefore, the victims of this child sex abuse have no recourse. The state's attorney's office isn't criminally charging any priests. so these people's abusers aren't going to jail. When they try to take their abusers, the Catholic Church, for instance, in 1994, when Jane Doe and Jane Roe came forward, when they sued the Catholic Church and Father Maskell, they were fought tooth and nail and they were buried. So by keeping...
It was after the statute of limitations. I mean, they had no legal standing to sue at that juncture.
Exactly. And as I documented, I watched 2 years while the Catholic Church testified to not extend the statute of limitations, and it's in the documentary, and they finally, now that the documentary has been announced, seem to be on the side of extending the statute of limitations.
The church's past history with treating cases of abuse had, in fact, by their own admission, been to deny the allegations and to cover it up. But that changed, their strategy and their approach to these cases changed in the early 1980s. Did you uncover any incidents of abuse that were not reported from 1983 or 4 through the present time?
Of Maskell's abuse?
Or anybody's abuse.
Well, we're not looking at any other priest besides Maskell. Mm-hmm. And I was focusing specifically on the Archbishop Keogh days. So I'm actually chilled to the bone. We weren't investigating for that. We weren't investigating for what happened to Maskell after he went AWOL during this trial and moved to Ireland. Just since the trailer's been released, reporters from Ireland are emailing me saying, oh, did you know when Maskell was over here in Ireland, he was actually operating as a psychologist. Maskell was a Johns Hopkins trained psychologist, which is a whole part of this problem too, which you'll see in the series, which is the psychological rape that he was doing to these children as well. So I'm terrified. I'm chilled to the bone at what might come out of this, because I was only looking to work with people that happened in the late 60s and the early 70s and not actively looking for people after. And yes, we know of some people who were abused after, but I'm terrified of what might come out after the documentary.
But do you think that there has been a substantial change, and I'm going to give you 10 seconds to answer this, to the way the church is handling these allegations now as opposed to the way they were handling them in 1970?
Oh, absolutely. There was far more secrecy, and abuse wasn't even a word in 1969. At least we're saying the word and showing compassion now.
Ryan White is the director of The Keepers. We spoke earlier with Gemma Hoskins. She's featured in this 7-part docuseries that will be available to stream on Netflix Friday, and we've got a link to the trailer at our website, wypr.org/midday. Ryan White, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've also got a link to the Facebook page called Justice for Catherine Sesnick and Joyce Malecki that Sister Kathy's former students have established, and information about the National Sexual Assault Telephone Hotline if you or someone you know are a survivor of sexual assault and you need some help. Again, come to wypr.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about diversity in media. Newsrooms across the country aspire to have staffs that reflect the racial and ethnic mix of their communities and of the country at large. But do they succeed? We'll take a look at what newspapers, broadcasters, and web content providers are doing to see that a variety of perspectives are present in their news gathering operations, including those here at WYPR. Thanks to Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.